This podcast is produced by The Sound Boutique, an award-winning audio production company right here in Shepparton. It produces music for TV and brands, it fixes problem audio for a variety of clients, and yes, it produces podcasts like the one you're listening to right now, as well as providing training for people who want to produce their own. If you'd like help with anything from music, problem audio, or if you'd like your organisation to start a podcast, you can contact The Sound Boutique at the email hello@thesoundboutique.com or via the link in the show notes. This time on The Shepartonian.
In a time after the war when employment was a bit tight, I guess local people did manage to get some employment out of it, although they didn't include my granddad, who'd come back to Laleham after the First World War and gone for a job on the reservoir, but the foreman wanted a quid bribe to take him on, which he didn't have, so he didn't get the job.
There is a particular service called Pharmacy First, and that's a service whereby people can go to pharmacies and they can have certain treatments where they don't need to go to the doctor. So we're looking to publicise that. We're looking to do more meet and greets and provide that feedback back to the surgery.
Hello and welcome to The Shepartonian, sharing the voices, stories and moments that make this village what it is. This time we're starting by following the water. I met up with local historian Nick Pollard to hear how the Thames, the Queen Mary Reservoir and even the River Ash have shaped Shepparton's past and its present. Then we go across to Halliford Park, where I sat down with Ricky Wallace, the volunteer chair of the Patient Participation Group at Upper Halliford Medical Centre. If you've never heard of a PPG, you're not alone, but it's quietly changing how patients and practices work together. And of course, we'll wrap things up with the What's On Guide for August and the Shepartonian shout-out. And remember, if you'd like more information about The Shepartonian, you can visit theshepartonian.uk, where you'll find all episodes of the podcast, the link to subscribe to the newsletter, the Facebook and Instagram links, and even that big red button if you'd like to give someone in Shepparton a shout out. So, to the lock. Water is everywhere in Shepparton. The Thames draws our eastern edge, the Queen Mary Reservoir flattens the skyline to the north, and the River Ash slips quietly through the centre, easy to miss. But these bodies of water have played a major part in shaping the place we live in. To explore that, I met with local historian Nick Pollard, down by the lock, naturally.
Shepparton has obviously been very dependent on the River Thames over the years. When the original village was founded by the Saxons, it was, I think, very deliberately placed by the river. If you think about where the church square is now and the parish church, on that bit, it's very cleverly placed on a little bit of high ground by the river that doesn't flood. So, you know, even today when we have severe floods, that church square area never floods. But of course, from the earliest times, the river would have been very important for, as a means of communication, for travel, and particularly for trade. In the days when, you know, to start with, there were no appreciable roads at all, and even later into the 19th century when the roads weren't terribly good at all, before the coming of the railways, the river was the principal means of transportation, particularly of bulk objects such as agricultural products, manure, stuff like that was being transported. And of course Shepparton would have had its own wharf just at Ferry Square, at the back of Church Square there as well. Of course, the other importance of the river was for food, for fishing. In the early days, that would have been more subsistence, you know, actually supplying fish for food. There would have been fish traps put up to catch fish. Eels was a particular delicacy, of course, and there were special eel traps which were actually woven using willow from willow plantations along the banks of the Thames. So it was a very sort of sustainable local industry. But gradually, of course, as time went on, the river gained more of a sort of leisure use, and the fishing again became more of a sort of recreational pursuit rather than a subsistence sort of activity.
Today, the Thames feels timeless, but just a century ago, another body of water changed Shepparton dramatically. The Queen Mary Reservoir was completed in 1925 and swallowed a huge area of land just north of the village.
Yeah, the Queen Mary Reservoir was built really as one of a series of reservoirs to obviously supply water for London. And the reason it's in this area, because after the big stink of the 1860s, when London's water supply intakes were moved up to above Teddington on the non-tidal section, all the water industry was concentrated around the sort of Hampton, Sunbury, Walton, Molesey area. So this is where they needed the reservoirs. And when the Metropolitan Water Board was formed in 1902, they started a programme of increasing London's water storage capacity, because it had all been private companies before then. When they took over, they recognised that there was a need to increase London's water supply. So they built reservoirs at Staines at the start of the century. But by the 1920s, again, there was a shortage of water, and they'd already identified the Queen Mary, or as the Littleton Reservoir, as they called it originally, as a suitable site. It was a big open expanse of land, and Sir Richard Burbage, the managing director of Harrods, who owned Littleton Park House, sold the land, which was really Littleton Common, to the Metropolitan Water Board for constructing the reservoir. They started it just before the First World War, actually, but because of the First World War and the need to divert men and materials to wartime purposes, they shut down work for the rest of the war, and then they started up again after the war, and obviously completed it by 1925, when it was opened by King George V and Queen Mary, and of course that's why it's called the Queen Mary Reservoir.
The land may have looked empty, but people lived there, and the project took more than originally planned.
There were a couple of isolated cottages. In fact, one of them, Aslam Manor Cottage, was actually paid for by Sir Richard Burbage to be dismantled and moved outside the perimeter of the reservoir. And funnily enough, it's been moved again since, and it's now at the Chiltern Open Air Museum up in Chalfont St Giles. But the original intention was that was all that was going to be taken, but they had to change the shape of the reservoir, because originally it extended it out further to the west, but they found this pocket of running sands which they couldn't dig a trench in, literally, you know, it just filled up every time. So they had to change the plan of the reservoir and shorten it to the west, but extend it on the south, which meant they took the north part of the village of Littleton and a fair chunk of Littleton Green. Littleton Green you see now is only about a quarter of what was there originally. So they took several cottages and a farm and various other buildings in what was part of Littleton, and then they built the replacement houses that we see along New Road to house the people who'd been displaced.
Displaced? Those residents must have been quite upset.
There's no record of any particular resistance. I think society was a little more accepting of officialdom at the time. You can imagine if anyone suggested that scheme now, there'd be huge petitions and protests against it. But the local population, I suppose, seemed to be more accepting of these things. I mean, it wasn't to provide water for the local population. Clearly, it was to provide water for London. So there was no particular local benefit. Although in a time after the war when employment was a bit tight, I guess local people did managed to get some employment out of it, although they didn't include my granddad, who'd come back to Leyland after the First World War and gone for a job on the reservoir, but the foreman wanted a quid bribe to take him on, which he didn't have, so he didn't get the job.
Away from the grand scale of the Thames and the reservoir, there's another waterway that's easy to miss, but equally important.
The River Ash, it's a tributary of the Thames that actually comes off the River Colne up at the southern end of Staines Moor, and obviously it flows through Ashford and gives Ashford its name, and then it comes down through Halliford and reaches the Thames in the creek at Sunbury. It is actually the sort of boundary between the old parishes of Sunbury and Shepperton, so it's been significant in that sense. But if you go back into ancient history, it seems that it probably had quite a possibly ritual significance, because the Shepperton Henge, which was a large circular ditch and bank structure which was located in the early 1980s when they were digging Staines Road Farm for gravel, and contained the skeleton of a woman, a Neolithic woman, and also the skull of a wolf, so, you know, buried in the ditch, so some significance there. And that was contained within a loop of the River Ash. And there's a similar henge that they discovered up at Ashford when they were building the Bronzefield Prison. And that, again, is in the loop of the River Ash. So whether this proximity to water, you know, was a factor in citing these sites, we'll never really know. But it seems likely that there was some, you know, significance to it.
And it's not just the obvious waterways that have shaped Shepperton. I asked Nick about the forgotten ones, the lesser-known flows beneath our feet.
Yeah, one that's perhaps not remembered quite so well is the one that's called Black Ditch today. It never had a name when I was a kid in the 1960s, but it comes up in, it used to arise in fields, which are now gravel pits in the sort of sheep walk area, but it ran along the back of the footpath, along the back of St Nicholas School. And then, of course, it emerges near the Three Horseshoes pub, goes underneath the War Memorial, and then re-emerges in more or less a ditch that runs around the side of Russell Road. And it runs around into the Thames at Sandhills Meadow, more or less opposite the Red Lion pub there. That did used to flood quite significantly before they built the Shepperton bypass and enlarged the culvert under the War Memorial. There was only a small pipe that took it under the War Memorial, and it used to flood really badly in times of excessive rainfall. And this is why they had the little Lord's Bridge built over that area, because it was always getting flooded, and that linked up the sort of Church Square area of Shepperton with the present High Street area. But then it used to run more across the middle of Manor Park as well, until the Lord of the Manor, William Shaw Lindsay, who acquired it in the enclosures in the 1860s, he had it moved to alongside Russell Road where it is now. And again, that's why you get this flooding on Manor Park, because really it's the old bed of that stream.
Some of the best local history isn't written, it's whispered in stories. I asked Nick if any riverside tales have stuck with him.
I think one of the interesting ones relates to Doyley Cart Island, actually, which we can see from where we're recording this. And that's Richard Doyley Cart's crocodile, which he kept in a pool on the island. It wasn't a very big crocodile, I should hasten to add, but it did inevitably escape at one point. It got loose in the river, and it was out there for, I think, for a couple of weeks, until Richard Doyley Cart put up a £20 reward, which was quite a substantial sum of money in the late 19th century. And a group of local fishermen got together and managed to recapture it and return it to him.
So with new developments and changing times, are we in danger of losing our connection to the water?
Well, there is always a risk of that, I guess. I mean, where we're sitting down here at the Lock, it always seems to be a popular place. We've got the cafes here on the Lock Island itself, and of course at the Ferry Cafe. They bring a lot of people down. I was at the Swan Upping down here on Monday, and there was a good crowd of people here. And I think when people think of Shepperton, they do think of the riverside, and the riverside pubs are popular as well, you know, and that brings in people from far and wide, just from Shepperton itself. So I think people do connect with the river and the towpath, you know, people walk along it for recreation. But, you know, as new people come into the village, and I think, you know, there's always opportunities for people to discover more about their village and about the river, which has played such an important part in its history.
Before we finished, I asked Nick one last thing. If someone's walking along the riverbank today, what should they stop and notice?
I always think it's worth stopping and looking out for the wildlife, actually. It's an important part of it to me. We're very lucky to have the river here and the reservoir, although in a sense it was imposed on us. Again, it's a brilliant resource for sailing and that. But you do see a lot of wildlife up there as well, waterfowl in particular. And of course, on the river, we get these occasional sightings of the seal, which is just incredible to me. I never thought we'd see such a thing this far up the Thames when I was younger. But he seems to turn up regularly and spend quite a bit of time sunning himself on the jetty at Desborough Sailing Club and people's riverside gardens. So it's always worth looking at. There's always a chance of seeing a kingfisher or something, you know, when you're walking along a quieter stretch of the river. So I always think, yeah, don't just walk along on your phone or listening to music on headphones. Look around, see what there is around, and listen out for things as well.
Thanks to Nick Pollard from the Sunbury and Shepperton Local History Society. If you want to understand Shepperton, start by following the water. Are you planning on marking a moment that truly matters? Danielle Davis is an independent celebrant based in Shepperton, creating unique heartfelt ceremonies from weddings and vow renewals to naming ceremonies and farewells. Every story is different, and every ceremony should reflect that. Working closely with each couple, family or individual, Danielle crafts something personal and meaningful while offering guidance on all the legal aspects too. Together with her clients, Danielle creates ceremonies that capture personalities, journeys, and shared hopes for the future. Thoughtful, heartfelt, and entirely bespoke. so that every word truly belongs to them. Visit danieldavis.uk to find out more. Shepperton Matters is your monthly community magazine, hand-delivered, available for pickup, and also online at villagematters.co.uk. You'll find it full of stories, history, information, and local traders and advertisers. 9,000 copies are distributed every month. Call Monica Jones on 07979 808 991 for more information. One morning in Halliford Park, just across from the Upper Halliford Medical Centre, I met with Ricky Wallace, the volunteer chair of the surgery's Patient Participation Group, or PPG. If you've never heard of a PPG, you're not alone. But as Ricky explained to me, it's becoming an increasingly important link between local patients and their GP practice.
It's a group of a committee of four people, and we were formed 18 months ago when Sandy from the surgery reached out to patients. I'm the chairman, and John Curley is the vice chairman, and Sandra Dunn is the secretary, and Camilla Govington is a committee member. We are a conduit between the surgery and the patients. We look to have communication between the two, and that's really what we've been set up to do.
Communication is at the heart of what the PPG does. Ricky told me about the simple but effective way they connect with patients. Informal meet and greets held in the surgery itself.
We have regular meet and greets, which is an informal process whereby myself and committee members meet with patients in the surgery to discuss with them, are there any problems with the service, how do they find the service, anything they want to talk about. And the ones that I've run and the ones that the other committee members have run have all been very positive. And that positive news we have fed back to the surgery.
The group has already made a difference in practical ways too, particularly by building closer links with local pharmacies.
One of the things we've been doing is working with some of the local pharmacies to understand the services they provide, who the contacts are, so that we're then going to be looking to publicise that information on the screen that we have in the surgery. Also, John Curley, who's the vice chair, did a very good piece of work with Trio in Shepperton High Street, who didn't have access to be able to provide COVID vaccinations. John worked tirelessly with the NHS, which was quite a hard task, to make sure that Trio got access to be able to provide COVID injections.
Talking to Ricky, I realised the PPG isn't just about ideas, it's about insight. Volunteering gave him a rare view of how the surgery actually runs.
What I've learnt about the particular surgery that I'm involved with is that it's a very well-run surgery. They run a very tight ship. I've built very good relationships with the people that work there. And I think that, as I mentioned earlier, with the meet and greets, the patients are happy with the service and we have very little complaints. What have I learned in the 18 months? I've learned to see how hard they work on reception, what a good job they do. I've also come to see that the various other people that I've interacted with do a very good job.
The work hasn't gone unnoticed. In December of last year, the group marked its first anniversary by inviting the local MP, Lincoln Jopp, to see what they'd achieved.
Well, we decided that to mark the anniversary of 1 year, it would be a good idea to invite our local MP, Lincoln Jopp, and he was more than happy to come. And we had George Camille and other people from the surgery present and myself from the committee. We found Lincoln to be very engaging, very interested in what we did. And he clearly had done his research because he asked some very, very good questions. And I think it was, you know, very positive for us that he could come to the surgery and just see, you know, how well run it is.
For Ricky, being on the committee of the PPG is more than administration, it's personal. It started with a simple decision to volunteer.
As I've mentioned to you previously, I'm very keen to do some volunteering. I'm looking at options around that. And I think that when Sandy approached people, patients, I thought, yeah, it'd be a great opportunity, something I'd like to do. And looking back on the 18 months that I've done this, I'm very happy with it. I think it's been a good experience and I enjoy it.
And when I asked what has been most rewarding, the answer was swift.
I think it's been rewarding to see how well the surgery's run. I think it's been good to form really good relationships with George and the other staff that are there. And I think it's good to do the meet and greets and actually see how positive people are about the surgery. That's what I found to be very rewarding and interesting.
With those strong foundations, the group's focus now is on building for the future.
I think it's more of the same. I think it's looking to build on the relationships with the pharmacies. There is a particular service called Pharmacy First, and that's a service whereby people can go to pharmacies and they can have certain treatments where they don't need to go to the doctor. So we're looking to publicise that. We're looking to do more meet and greets and provide that feedback back to the surgery. It's really more of the same.
Yeah.
We have another person joining the committee who's going to join next week, so we have a full contingent and we have enough staff now. I would say that if anybody's got anything that they want to say to me about the service, or if they think there are any areas where it could be improved, we'd be interested to hear those. And we do also talk to other PPGs to see what they're doing. And I think as far as we're concerned, things are working well. George Camille runs a tight ship. The staff are very helpful and they do a good job.
Ricky Wallace, the volunteer chair of the Upper Halliford Patient Participation Group. Proof that sometimes the biggest changes in local healthcare start with a handful of volunteers, a few conversations, and a willingness to get involved.
What's going on in Shepparton?
Sponsored by Shepparton Matters. We have a bumper August full of events for you in and around Shepparton. And thanks to Monica at Shepparton Matters for the kind permission to reproduce a lot of these dates from the magazine. It's much appreciated. So on Saturday the 9th of August, the Sunbury Regatta at Desborough Sailing Club is on. A traditional skiff regatta with the main Thames clubs competing for points. And that includes a local tug of war and row for your local events. Open to all. And that's followed on Sunday the 10th with the Junior Regatta, also at the Desborough Sailing Club, for local children aged 7 to 15 racing against each other. Also on Sunday the 10th, from 2 till 4, it's Music in the Park. Staines Brass Band will be performing at the Lammas Bandstand, Lammas Recreation Ground, Raisbury Road, Staines upon Thames. And this is a free event. All you need to do is bring a chair or a picnic blanket. On Saturday the 16th of August, with doors open at 7pm, it's Queen's Greatest Hits with the Bohemians at the Hampton Hub Club, 3 Ashley Road, Hampton. And you can get tickets at hamptonhubclub.com or call 0770 636 303. On Sunday the 17th of August, it's the Beer, Gin and Music Festival at Sunbury Cricket Club. A selection of cask ales and special gins together with music and food stalls. If you head to sunburycricket.co.uk, you can find out more. Also on Sunday the 17th of August from 2 till 4pm, it's Music in the Park. Dale Harris and Sophie Varlow will be performing at the Walled Garden at Thames Street in Sunbury. Bring a chair or picnic blanket again. Refreshments from the cafe. Again, it's a free event. Tuesday the 19th to Saturday the 30th of August, Sunbury working artists will be exhibiting at the Sunbury Millennium Embroidery Gallery in Thames Street, Lower Sunbury. That's free. Saturday the 23rd of August at 8pm, Hampton Sailing Club present Radio Caroline DJ Peter P.A. Anthony, a live Q-Burn show. Headliners are Kimberly Rue and Lee Cave Berry. Kimberly was a member of Katrina and the Waves and wrote Walking on Sunshine and many more. Ooh. Tickets are £15, £10 for members, and if you subscribe to the Shepartonian newsletter, the email's in there for you to purchase tickets. On Sunday the 24th of August from 6 till 9pm, Strawberry Hill House presents the Pasadena Roof Orchestra. Music from the Roaring Twenties and Elegant Thirties. That sounds fun. Again, bring a picnic and enjoy the music, taking you back in time to the setting of our beautiful building and grounds in Twickenham. Tickets and more information at strawberryhillhouse.org.uk. And finally, on Sunday the 31st of August, 2 till 4pm, it's back to the Walled Garden in Thames Street, Sunbury, for Music in the Park. Lindham Wind Orchestra this time will be performing. Bring a chair or a picnic blanket, refreshments from the cafe. And again, it's a free event. So that's what's going on in August.
Hear this, the Shepartonian shout-out.
So this month's Shepartonian shout-out is in the form of a poll. I put a poll out on social media to the good people of Shepparton asking, what's your favourite local walk? Where's your go-to walking route around Shepparton? Is it 1, by the Thames at Dumpsy Meadow? Is it 2, around Manor Park? Is it 3, through the village centre and High Street? Is it 4, anywhere with a good coffee stop? I asked you to comment with your pick or suggest a hidden gem we should all try. So Darren said the lakes and studios walk all day long. Thank you, Darren. Carol says I walk all of these and more. You may have seen me out and about. Well, now you've posted a photo of you and your dogs, Carol, I will look out for you and say hello. Deborah says, why do we never see the pits or the lakes on this type of list? Fair dues. Alexandra says, one is stunning. We love it. That's by the Thames at Dumpsy Meadow. Couldn't agree more there, Alexandra. And Lulu says, four, anywhere with a good coffee stop. Sounds like Lulu enjoys a coffee. So do you have a favourite walk around Shepperton? Do let me know by visiting theshepertonian.uk, and there are ways to get in touch through there and through the Facebook group and Instagram account. And that's it for this episode of The Shepertonian. Thanks to Nick Pollard from the Sunbury and Shepperton Local History Society for sharing his knowledge, and to Ricky Wallace for talking about the work of the Patient Participation Group. If you want more local stories, photos, and the full list of events, you can sign up to the Shepertonian newsletter at theshepertonian.uk. I'm Gareth, so until next time, take care, and I'll see you around.